Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
Well, welcome back, and delighted to have with us today Michael Wilkerson. He's an investor, strategic advisor, and the founder of Stormwall.com. He's the author of a fascinating book called Why America Matters, The Case for New Exceptionalism. And you can check that out. I'll get you a website here in just a moment. There's a picture of the cover of the book for those of you watching on the Dove TV network. And, of course, the website is whyamericamatters.com. Check that out. Michael, good to see you. Thanks for your time. How are you?
Perry, I'm doing well. Good to be with you today.
You bet. Why did you write this book? What was on your mind?
Wow, that's a simple question and a complex answer. You know, I had never really written before the year 2000. I started writing in that year amidst lockdowns, amidst the social unrest, amidst all of the confusion and chaos that was going on in our country, because I came to a conclusion that something was really, really wrong, and I wanted to express it, and I wanted to work through my own thoughts about it. I wrote a book called Stormwall in 2020 that talked about things that were going on with the pandemic, challenges with a rising China, the social unrest, and looming inflation, which at the time people thought, oh, that's a crazy idea. But it led me, after writing that book, to realize that I had identified a number of problems, but didn't necessarily pose a solution or a prescription for how can we address these issues as a nation. So I wrote Why America Matters in many ways as a follow-up to do just that, to answer for myself and for many Americans some fundamental questions like, why are we so divided? Why are we so confused about our national identity? Who are we as a people? Why does it matter? And what can we do to address these issues that we're facing as a nation?
All right, I want to unpack that, Michael, because you asked some big ones here. And my first question is, why are we divided? And a secondary question is it strategic that we are divided?
By strategic, do you mean is it intentional? Is there an intent behind it?
Right, yeah.
Great questions. So why are we divided? So I talk about four crises in the book, Why America Matters. One of them is the crisis of identity, that as Americans, we're very confused now as to who we are, what matters. Big questions like, is democracy important? Is capitalism a good way to form the economy? And what I've observed is that the younger you go in age cohort, the more challenging those questions become, the more confusion there is around it. So on the one hand, it has to do with what are we being taught? And it's pretty clear that in your generation or my generation growing up, we would have got education on American history. We've gotten education around civics and why patriotism mattered, why our nation matters. Younger generations are not getting any of that today. In fact, they're getting the opposite, which is a misinformation, a deception, and a false ideology, even about our own history and about the meaning of this country and the relevance of American ideals and values. The second part of your question, is it intentional? Absolutely. So you look back over the past 50 years and the whole history of postmodernism, teaching in our schools around theory, critical race theory, other forms of theory. Clearly, the intention is to undermine the very meaning of words, the idea that there is a truth, that there is an objective reality out there to which we're all subject, that biology is real, that science is real, all of these things that were part of our identity when the nation was formed around both Judeo-Christian principles, but ideas of the Enlightenment, which is that truth was out there, that it could be discovered, that words had meaning. All of these things have been under attack in this generation.
In your book, Michael, you mentioned that we face basically four crises. What are they?
So crisis of circumstances, which is this tidal wave of issues that we face. You know, pandemic is one example. Inflation and the economic challenges is clearly another. The conflict with China and with other adversaries around the world. Secondly, the crisis of identity, which I just talked about. The third, and I think this is an important one, is the crisis of institutions. You know, we've really hit this point in our society where our federal government institutions have stopped functioning the way they were intended to be to function. They're still there. They're growing in size, almost like a cancer that isn't serving the body anymore, but yet continues to grow because it continues to be fed. And it is true that they're not functioning both in terms of competence, but also because of the corruption that exists in a lot of these institutions. So the crisis of institutions is a big one for me. You know, when we've reached a point where our government no longer trusts us and we no longer trust them for apparently pretty good reasons when half the country are labeled domestic terrorists. And then lastly, what I call the crisis of engagement, which is really an outgrowth of the first three. If we don't know who we are, if we don't know what truth is anymore, if our institutions aren't functioning, how can we design effective policies to address the needs of this nation, the domestic policies, things like energy, immigration, or foreign policy, how we engage with other countries around the world? Those are the four crises that I describe in Why America Matters.
Well done. Again, folks, check out the book, Why America Matters, The Case for New Exceptionalism. Check that out by Michael Wilkerson, and I'm assuming it's available at the bookstores and online. Check that out.
Yeah, you can get it at whyamericamatters.com. It's an easy one to remember, or as you said, anywhere that digital books are sold online.
I've often said that the soul of America is good, but our systems are broken. Kind of summarizing what you just said, but is our soul enough to save us?
Well, the good news is that it has been in the past. So think about all the way back to the founding, the ideas of the Declaration, the ideas of the Constitution, ideas that all men were created equal, ideas that we had God-given, unalienable rights that couldn't be taken away by any sovereign, ideas around the separations of power between the branches of government, but also between the federal government and the states. Ideas like the rule of law and private property, but rule of law being that no one, no sovereign, no bureaucracy, no three-lettered agency was above the law, that we were all subject to it, and we all had equal rights under it. Those ideas made America great and made America what it is. They were unique at the time. They had been talked about but never put into practice in a government anywhere in the world. Immediately, those ideas were sorely tested, the ideas of equality, that all men were created equal. Mm-hmm. Well, it was written there, it was agreed upon, and then in practice, it was not put in place. We had 70 years of slavery in this nation, and it took a violent civil war and a tearing apart of our country in order to affirm the values of the Declaration and of the Constitution. But what gives me hope is that just like that crisis, the crisis at our founding, or the Revolutionary War, independence from Britain, the crisis around abolition and ending slavery in this nation, the Civil War, the Great Depression, the wars, the turmoils of the 60s, somehow America and Americans have bounced back. Somehow we have, generation after generation, when tested, returned to those values. So while I'm realistic about the current state of our nation and the challenges we face, I am optimistic that we can recover what makes America great. We can recover this exceptionalism, but it's going to take work.
I'm going to ask you a big question. Can we do it without God?
I don't believe so. And by the way, our founders didn't believe so either. Almost universally, they talked about, the founding fathers talked about this issue. Even if personally they didn't, may or may not have had a personal faith, they all recognized the importance of religion for the founding of a democratic republic like what they were trying to build. Why? Well, without religion, there was no morality. Without morality, let me back it up one step. Without God, there's no religion. Without religion, there's no morality. But without morality, there's no truth. And without truth, there's no trust. And without these things, you can have a dictatorship, you can have a despotism, a totalitarianism. You cannot have the kind of democratic republic that we have that relies on trust, trust in one another, trust in our government to do the right thing. So, no, I don't believe that America can recover its greatness if we continue down a path that increasingly becomes more secularized. Again, going back to the crisis of identity, the younger you go in age cohort, the less binding are those views, less strong are those views around whether God is there and whether it matters.
Thank you. Because what's so interesting to me is that, I don't want to sound political here, but we are without leadership. We're at a drift. We actually think that a blue team or a red team is the answer. I just had Ambassador Brown back on. We were talking about this. And we're now reaching a time, it's kind of like what happened on the football field a couple of weeks ago when Hamlin fell to the ground with a heart attack and they had to revive him on the field. And the whole team, the whole stadium stopped and reached beyond themselves and asked God to help. And you kind of feel like that's where we are in America. We have to reach beyond ourselves. We need this transcendent power that brought us together initially to visit us again, that the red and the right can't seem to get it together. You sense that?
Well, it's absolutely true. And what's interesting, and I don't want to make this political either, but you do notice that the Democratic Party today has become the party of secularism. It is the party that almost universally identifies with the idea that God doesn't matter, that we shouldn't have religion in the public square. You know, the ideas of the separation of church and state was, and Thomas Jefferson said it himself, was to keep the state out of the churches, not to keep religion out of public life. And yet that's the view that's been adopted by the secularists of our day today. So I think you're hitting on a really critical issue from which many other issues flow. And ultimately, this is going to have to change for our society to change.
On that vein, I noticed something else that it's interesting to me. Again, I don't want to sound political, but there's some examples here to draw from. And that was the last election cycle, there wasn't a red wave. And you start to unpack that and you dissect it. There's a lot of reasons out there. Mm-hmm. But there is one thing that was kind of interesting to me is when moms and dads woke up that their kids were being propagandized in school, they changed the state of Virginia in one election. Mm-hmm. And that was based on morality. That decision was based on morality. Mom and dads are beginning to sense now something's wrong here. Mom and dads are starting to go to a school board meeting. Mom and dads are starting to say, no, not for my child. It seems to me that goes back to the soul issue of this country, that mom and dads don't want to lose their freedom, they don't want to lose their choices, and they don't want their kids to be exposed to this stuff. So I see hope in that. What's your thoughts?
Absolutely. In fact, I talk about it in my book, Why America Matters, pretty extensively, the need to return to that sort of grassroots involvement by parents, by individuals. Look at what happened in Loudoun County. And you know, by the way, well, the pandemic lockdown response was a terrible thing. It did have a couple of silver lining type benefits. One was to bring the curriculum into the households where parents could see what was actually going on. They could see the indoctrination. They could see the false ideologies, including around gender, around sexuality, around all of these issues. It was finally enough for Americans to wake up, for parents to wake up, mama bears and papa bears around the country to say, no, you don't have a right to twist and pervert the minds of my 8-year-olds, 5-year-olds, whatever it was. So I think the example you gave, you know, of Loudoun County and of Virginia as a state is exactly what we need across this nation, this grassroots rising up with parents in that case that were not afraid and, in fact, did not back down in the face of government intimidation from the DOJ. They stood their ground, overturned that school board, and ultimately changed the governor to back someone who believed in parental rights.
And that goes back to the very reason we have the Constitution, so we have those rights to peaceably assemble, to protest, to push back. It is we the people, not them the government. So what happened in Loudoun County was really a display of what America's all about. It was a display of who we are, because those people could stand up and say, no, no. But it was done from a moral base. It wasn't done from a political base. It was done from a moral base. And so I say all that to say that I admire the fact that you recognize in your writings that the exceptionalism of America, from what I'm hearing you say, is the transcendent power of God involved in what we're doing.
It has to be, because, again, going back to what we were talking about earlier, without God, without a divine, there is no truth. There simply isn't. There is no foundation upon which all these other ideas and virtues can thrive. In fact, all that's left is the will to power in that case. And the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche said the same thing when he was talking about the so-called death of God. He actually wasn't encouraging it. He was saying, if this is happening, but one of the consequences will be an absolute loss of truth. So we've seen this, that the primary attack, the ideological attack that's come out of our universities, out of the powerful and elite thought centers, has been this undermining of the idea that there's an objective reality, there's an objective truth. Believe whatever you want, including about your own gender or your own biology, is one of the most extreme and absurd examples, but across all sorts of fields of knowledge as well. And this, of course, is leading us where we've gotten all of the confusion, all of the uncertainty. Without God, we're lost.
Yeah. Let me take a quick break. Let me show our viewers and listeners check out Michael's book, and it's called Why America Matters. And that is also his website where you can get the book, whyamericanmatters.com, or look for it online or at the bookstores. I think you're going to find this to be fascinating. He does talk about the four crises, but he also says he doesn't believe that we're neither declining nor dying. We're just in a bad season. We'll talk about that when we come back.
We'll be back to this week's interview in just a few seconds. In the meantime, we want to let you know that you can watch this interview, plus many more exclusive interviews that happen this week on the Dove's Daily TV and radio show, by visiting our website, thedove.us. And while you're there, sign up for our free daily devotional, The Word for You Today. 3 months of daily readings that will connect you with God's Word. Now, back to the show.
And honored to have with us today Michael Wilkerson. He's an investor, strategic advisor, and the founder of Stormwall.com. We'll come to that in just a moment. But he's written a fascinating book called Why America Matters, The Case for a New Exceptionalism. And a couple of websites, whyamericamatters.com and then Stormwall.com are his two websites. You can check it out. Michael, before I go to Stormwall, just one more quick question here on your book, and you mentioned in there that you don't believe that we're neither declining nor dying, that we're just in a bad winter storm. Will this season ever end?
Well, that's the thing about winter, is when you're in it, it feels like it's never going to end, but the good news is it does. I think many people like to talk about the demise of America, that, we're dying, our greatness is fading. Like, I think it was it Mark Twain who said, the reports of my death have been greatly exaggerated. And I think it's the same is true for America. What is winter like? It's cold. It's dark. Nothing's growing. Nothing appears to be living. But you need to go through winter in order to get through spring, to get to spring, and to get to renewal, and to get to revival, and to get to life. I believe that we are in a winter season. It feels deathlike. It feels cold. It feels unfriendly. It's dark. And it feels long. It's okay. We can recover through this. We can come out of this stronger and better. And in spite of the difficulties that we faced in the last 3 years, starting with pandemic era lockdowns, all of the things we've seen, all of the corruption out of our three-letter agencies and government, all of the list just goes on and on. This has been an important wake-up call for us. We needed to see it. We needed to have this period of discovery, to realize the depth of what was going on. Now, the question is whether enough Americans will get off of their couches, stop being apathetic. I put myself in this camp as well, that there's a role for all of us here to play. This isn't, spring isn't going to come from a top-down effort. Well, of course, who's in the White House matters. Elections once every 4 years matter. The reality is, what matters most is that Americans start to do what they've historically done a great job of, getting involved through their churches, through civic organizations, locally, in their schools, in their town councils, in whatever form is possible. But it is absolutely a moment where if we want to see real change, we're going to have to stand up and resist and stand up and fight for it, because those who disagree with these ideas of American greatness and freedom and liberty, they've been on the march for a while, and it took us a while to catch up and realize what was going on.
Yeah, that's well said. Thank you. Thank you. I want to have you change hats. I know you're an economist, just trying to figure out kind of where your brain is on some of this stuff. What's your outlook for the economy in the United States for 2023?
Well, I recently wrote an article a couple weeks ago following the new year called 12 predictions for 2023. Some of them were about geopolitics and some of the issues around China and our relationship with the rest of the world, but some of them were about the economy. And I talked about that it does look very strongly like the U.S. is headed into recession here in the first half of 2023. In fact, just yesterday, the Conference Board came out with their leading indicators. All of them were negative and pointing again towards likelihood of recession in the coming year. You look at what's happening in the housing markets. You look at what's happening with big corporations, massive layoffs, especially in the tech sector, but it's spreading elsewhere. So I think 2023 is going to be a bit rough. I think we are going to see recession. We had a soft one, a technical recession, the first half of 2020, kind of meandered through that. This one, I think, is going to be deeper and more real. The other thing that I argue, and this is the minority report, not a lot of people agree with me, or at least not the consensus, which is that I don't believe we've seen the worst of inflation. There's a specific reason for that, is because while I acknowledge for sure that inflation was made worse by pandemic lockdowns, unlocking, and the growth supply chain issues that happened, there's a deeper issue going on here, Perry, and that is, if you look at what the government has done since the global financial crisis, they have thrown money at the problem of trying to stimulate economic recovery. Did you know, Perry, that since 2007, the U.S. dollar money supply has tripled? Okay, it's grown from about 7 million to 21 million. That's roughly 7% a year, while the economy itself has been growing at 2 to 3% a year. So when you have three times as much money chasing roughly the same amount of goods or with slight growth, what happens? Prices inevitably rise. But they often rise delayed by several years. And I think that's what we're seeing now. We are in a long-term process of prices catching up with this dramatic increase in the money supply. And until it does, or at least gets close to it, inflation is not going to end. Think about other factors, the fact that we have $31 trillion of debt right now. That's about $90,000 per American. With the spending that continues to go on, you saw this $1.7 trillion infrastructure, or not infrastructure bill, excuse me, omnibus spending package that was rushed through the House at the end of the year. We're spending 3 to 4 times on entitlement programs than we are on productive assets. All of these things are negative for inflation, negative for the power of the dollar. And while I hate to be negative, I think on this issue, Americans still need to be looking out for inflation, protecting themselves in the best ways they can from diminishing purchasing power.
Okay, I get that. We run a small company here trying to figure out, the path ahead. I used to budget annually, and then I used to budget semi-annually, and then I used to budget quarterly, and now I budget monthly. that's how difficult it's become. But if inflation is on the rise, and they try to tame it by throwing higher interest rates, sooner or later that's going to hit the wall. That's not the answer either, right?
That's right. And by the way, that's another reason I argue that inflation will continue to run. there's always this trade-off between letting inflation run or raising interest rates to try to stop it, but that has a very negative effect on the economy. It stimulates recession, rising unemployment. Between the two, governments always and everywhere choose inflation. Why? Because allowing inflation to get out of, unemployment and recession to get out of control, that's when people show up with torches and pitchforks in the street. Inflation is a pain, but it is one that governments assume people can handle. And secondly, it helps devalue or deflate the real value of the national debt. So I think, therefore, no matter what they say about being inflation hawks, fighting, et cetera, when it comes down to the difficult choice that you just described between inflation and recession, the government here in the U.S. and around the world will choose inflation.
Wow. Can you explain, I mean, even this morning, the ringing of the bell, the stock market was up 250 points. And I'm going, what's going on here? What's driving this? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, it is the same issue around the money supply. So we call it the everything bubble. When you increase the money supply by three times by pushing it through the financial system, that has to go somewhere. It has to go into assets. It has to go into stock and bond market. It has to go into real estate. It has to go into crypto. It has to go somewhere. And we are still seeing this. We're seeing this increasing disconnection between underlying earnings, which is what you're buying when you buy a stock. You're buying the future value or the future stream of earnings that would come from that. And so there's a disconnect from that, which is going down as we head into recession 23, and the market, which continues to go up. I don't have a good justification for it. I think there's something fundamentally flawed. On the other hand, it's a tough thing to bet against because no one ever gets timing right.
All right. Let me take advantage of the time here. There was a story out that the Saudis are thinking about dropping the dollar and going with the yen for oil. I guess politically, that's just full of all kinds of trouble. But how dangerous even is that thinking?
Well, the first thing, and I'll go back to my 12 thoughts or 12 predictions for 2023. One of the things I do talk about as one of them are shifting global alliances, that we're going to be surprised to see how partnerships, alliances, allies around the world continue to shift. And I don't think that's favorable for the United States. Saudi Arabia is looking around the world, recognizing the rising influence of China, the hostility of the U.S. and the use of the U.S. dollar to impose economic sanctions on Russia, Iran, elsewhere, realizing that they don't want to get caught in that same trap, and making a decision, rightly or wrongly, from our perspective, from their perspective, that they need more friends and they need to ensure that they don't get caught in this U.S. dollar trap. It's not good for the U.S. It's not good for the U.S. dollar. I argue that our positions around sanctions and other things are actually accelerating that process. But this is a reality that we're likely to see. You see just another example that as China and Russia have strengthened their ties, that they are wooing the BRICS nations, places like Brazil, South Africa, India, Turkey, into their camp for similar reasons. And the U.S., unfortunately, is taking a very heavy-handed and aggressive stance towards this, as opposed to figuring out why these nations are motivated to do it in the first place and what could we do to keep them in our camp.
All right. Less than a minute, Michael, quickly. In spite of inflation and certainly the look at the recession, the dollar seems to be fairly strong. Can you tell me why?
Well, there are a couple of things going on there. Yeah, the dollar's been extremely strong. That caught me by surprise to see how much it went forward. But when yields are rising, the dollar continues to be viewed as a safe haven asset, number one. The other thing that was happening is as interest rates were rising, foreign nations were trying to pay down their debt, their U.S. dollar-denominated debt that was variable. In other words, that the cost of that debt was going up as interest rates were rising. So they were trying to pay down their debt. They needed dollars to do this. So there was a big demand pull of U.S. dollars around the world, which caused it to rise, as did the rising interest rates themselves.
Thanks for your time, friend. We value it greatly. Love to have you back. Let me say to our viewers and listeners, check out the book, Why America Matters, The Case for New Exceptionalism. Michael's website is whyamericamatters.com or his other website, stormwall.com. And you can go there for great advice as well. Michael, thanks for your time. God bless your friend for what you do. Keep staying the fight.
Thanks, very best to you and your audience.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.